Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans, and should be. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Army vet Gabe Evans. Then Colonel Scott Fisher will discuss the Officers' Christian Fellowship, and General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce Gabe Evans. Gabe served with our Army, active and National Guard, including time in combat. He also spent 10 years in law enforcement, and he plans to keep serving his community and our nation. Welcome, Gabe.
Thanks so much for having me on, Denny.
Gabe, tell us about your time in the Army. When and why did you join? What'd you do?
Well, that really starts with both of my grandparents. Both of them were military veterans on my dad's side, 20-year naval aviator on my mom's side. Grandpa Chavez actually earned his citizenship by fighting in World War II in the Army. He was an immigrant from Mexico, got two Purple Hearts in the push to relieve Bastogne in World War II. And that was how the Chavez family on that side earned their citizenship. So from both of my grandparents to my parents, to me, it was passed down that you love your country, you love your community, you do what's necessary to take care of and support your country. And so that's why in college, I joined the U.S. Army. The recruiter showed up. I, you know, knew he might get me, so I avoided him the first day, but he came back the second day. I avoided him the second day. He came back a third day, and that's when he got me. So I joined the Army 2007. I was part of the Virginia Army National Guard for 2 years while I was working my way through college. Upon graduating and commissioning, the Army sent me down to beautiful Fort Rucker, Alabama, where I learned how to fly Black Hawk helicopters. And you mentioned that you might have Chris Petty on later. I'm very curious if that's my Chris Petty.
Yes, it is.
Well, then I know Colonel Chris Petty. Learned how to fly Black Hawk helicopters. Came back here to Colorado. I was a junior officer when Chris Petty was a senior guy around here. We deployed overseas to the Middle East 2012, 2013, ended up operating in 9 different countries on that deployment. Came back home and then did wildfires, floods, search and rescues, all the stuff that the National Guard does here in Colorado. Did that all the way up till 2018. I was a company commander at the time with a below the zone recommendation from my senior rater for a promotion to major. And my wife said, you're in the military and you're in law enforcement. You're married with 2 kids. It's time to pick one job where you get shot at. So that was my hint to start phasing out of the military. I got my honorable discharge July 24th, 2019.
You know, all of that makes real sense. So what did you do in law enforcement?
Well, I loved the military. All of my cops will tell you it took about 2 years for me to get over the loss of identity that I suffered when I was no longer, you know, Gabe Evans, Black Hawk pilot in command extraordinaire. So my law enforcement dates were 2011 to 2022. Part of the reason my wife told me to get out of the military was because I was spending between 70 and 80 hours a week doing both jobs. In law enforcement, like kind of the north suburbs of the Denver metro area, like everybody else, I started off as a patrol cop and found I was pretty good at not only doing that, but when they found out I could do the math associated with being a pilot, they told me that I was going to become a forensic accident reconstructionist. So went to the 6 weeks of classes learning how to reconstruct serious and fatal accidents, did so well at that. They promoted me to sergeant and I took over one of the units doing fatal accident reconstruction. I was also a patrol sergeant, and then I served as the liaison sergeant, basically to the rest of the city. So, you know, parks, streets, urban renewal, all of the other departments in the city that have a nexus to public safety. Did good enough of that job. They promoted me again to be a lieutenant and a watch commander. It's basically the same role as a company commander. When I came on duty, my city, I had some sergeants and a whole bunch of cops that worked for me, and whatever the city of 125,000 folks could throw at me, it was my job to figure out how to keep the public safe and make sure everybody went home that night. So did that up until 2022, when things just took a bad turn in Colorado from some of the political positions and policies that were affecting my officers' ability to actually fulfill their oath and keep the public safe. And so went down a different path that I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute.
Okay, that makes real sense. And my whole family is law enforcement, except me. I went in the military. And my son just retired as a police sergeant. So therefore, I'm understanding what you're saying. And the commitment that it takes to do it and the need to be doing it right is important.
It's critically important. I would use, you know, as a military pilot, we would talk all the time about aircrew coordination training, aka, you know, all of this stuff. How do we, when we're in the cockpit, how do we share mission information? How do we cross check and recheck each other to make sure we're making a good decision so that we don't crash the aircraft? And I, there was a lot of that that transferred over to how I ran my my units when I was a sergeant and a lieutenant on the streets as a police officer.
Well, if you're a leader, you are taking care of your people and you're taking care of your mission. That's given. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Army vet Gabe Evans. Gabe, you clearly have a drive in you to serve the people, the country, your community, the nation. I understand that you have plans to keep doing that. Talk to us about those plans.
Well, like I alluded to a minute ago, when I watched public safety evaporate in Colorado because of some of the policies that were being passed by our state legislature, I'll give you a quick example. Some of my buddies in law enforcement, they arrested this guy for home invasion, breaking and entering into homes. So they arrested him, they took him to jail. And then because of some of the recent policies, he walked in the front of the jail, filled out a few pieces of paperwork, walked right out the back of the jail, no money down, promised to be good. He did not keep that promise because 4 hours after his first arrest, that same shift of officers caught him in the exact same neighborhood, breaking into houses again, only with a trip to jail in between. And so, as you can imagine, that's very demoralizing to law enforcement when they're out putting their lives on the line, trying to do their jobs, trying to hold the bad guys accountable, trying to do it the correct way. And even when they do it right, well, you know, that guy walks out before the ink's even dry on the reports that they turned in. And so as a result of that, in 2022, I stepped away from law enforcement, ran for and won election to the Colorado State Legislature, so making state laws. I'm a current state representative in Colorado, and I happen to live in the 8th Congressional District. So that's U.S. House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., which is one of the most competitive seats in the nation. And so I've thrown my hat into that ring as well, just because, you know, all of us that have been veterans and know what the world is like outside of the United States know that we are in an increasingly dangerous and volatile time internationally. And so I think it's critical that we have good veteran leadership in Congress. And so I'm running for Congress now in the 8th Congressional District in Colorado.
We've got a couple of minutes, Gabe. Tell us how people can get in touch with you, how they can support you. I'm sure you can use financial donations. How can people get in touch with you and stay in touch with you?
Yeah, so my website is electgabeevans.com, elect, GABEEVANS.com. You'll have two E's right next to each other in the middle there. That'll tell you a little bit more about myself. There's an email on there where you can send me emails. I'll also give that to you. It's Gabe, G-A-B-E, at electgabeevans.com. Feel free to reach out. Denny, like you said, unfortunately, these things aren't cheap. Like every good NCO told me, right? Armies need beans and bullets. And for a campaign, unfortunately, that does mean that I got to ask folks for their support. Every dollar counts as far as being able to get the message out there and try to send a veteran to Congress that loves this country and is going to continue to stand up and fight as hard as I can for this country, just in a different capacity.
Gabe, thank you. Thank you for sharing with us today. Thank you for your past service to our nation in both uniforms that you wore. I sincerely hope that you are able to continue to serve the manner that you want to go. You sound like the kind of guy that can do the job.
Well, I really appreciate that vote of confidence. You know, it's just carrying those lessons learned on the streets or overseas in a combat zone and trying to bring those to, you know, the state legislature and the halls of Congress to make sure we're actually making good decisions based on real world experience and not, as we all know, whatever information is allowed to make it up to the top.
And we need people with those values and that ability to think critically that you're just describing. Abe, Grabe, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. God bless you.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on.
Next, co-host Skip and I will discuss some of the challenges our nation and the world are facing, at least from our opinion. Then General Chris Petty will present the battle of the month. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down each time. Do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Veterans have a unique perspective on healthcare, foreign policy, and federal spending.
Concerned Veterans for America provides veterans and the military community a chance to share that perspective and drive change that will make Americans safer and more prosperous.
Want to join the movement and the thousands of activists in our grassroots army? Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. My primary co-host, Skip Coriel, and I decided that it's time to talk about some things, just the two of us just talking together, about some things that really bug us. So this is not really a scheduled or rehearsed thing, but we just wanted to share some things. And I think one of the big things is our country and our military has really drifted away from the godly values and standards that this country was founded on and lived by for several hundred years.
Well, it's base to our nation. We were founded on certain principles, Judeo-Christian principles. And if we go away from our base, then we're destroying our foundation and everything else crumbles after that. I mean, we're not seeing it just in the military. We're seeing it in every aspect of American life. When you stray from morality, from a God, I mean, what does God give us? God gives us a lot of things. He gives us accountability, right? I mean, yes. If there's no God, can't we pretty much do, there's no God and the criminal justice system is broken down. So no God, no accountability in the afterlife, no accountability in this life. We can do whatever we want to do.
And if there is a God, and you can't read the Declaration of Independence and miss the regular references to God, if God gave us this wonderful nation, we should be good stewards of it. We should be taking care of it. We should be in contact with our elected officials and school board members and all those people and holding them accountable. And if we aren't doing it, then nobody is, because we are the people, right?
Well, yeah. I think the good news for me, as far as God goes, I mean, I've read several articles just in the past week where they're interviewing young people in their teens, their 20s and 30s, which to you and I, those are kids, right? Kids and grandkids. Yep. And the encouraging thing is that they're questioning the direction that the far left is taking us, and they feel the need to have a strong belief in God, because, it's not just belief in God. What do we get with churches? We also get a sense of community. We get a sense of responsibility. We get a sense of accountability in that we're accountable to the people who are around us now. And, we also get respect for elders and the wisdom that they have because of the experiences that they've had. And I think there's something in the last couple of generations that is waking up and saying, what we're doing right now, it's not working. And it's like taking a loose, in the Marines, we call them an Irish pennant, right? A loose string on a piece of cloth, and you pull on it and everything else unravels because of it. And I think the belief in God is that Irish pennant, you grab it and you pull it and the whole garment just falls apart, Colonel.
That's really well put, Skip. And so certainly one of the things that we can encourage our listeners, as well as reinforce the commitment in our own lives, is that we need to return to God. And I'm not describing any particular religion or way to do it, but it is acknowledging that there's a supreme being who created this thing and created us, and we're responsible to him.
Yeah.
I'm a Christian. I'm also sort of a Jew. I don't care. I mean, I do care, but there is a higher power, and we must be broken before that power. And I exclude those who say that their higher power says kill everybody who doesn't think the way you do, which is what radical Muslims are doing.
Exactly.
Not all Muslims, just radical Muslims. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, there's that. And there's a few things going on in the Middle East, I think, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. Colonel, there's a lot going on over there. You know, how would you like to be a Mideast war planner right now, Colonel?
I mean, yeah, I was one about 45 years ago.
Yes, but isn't it a lot more? It's scary over there. It's always been scary in the Middle East, but now it's like the lunatics are in charge of the asylum over there. I mean, Iran, they're just crazy, crazy as an outhouse bat. It's like they've come unglued and they feel empowered. They're not afraid of anyone. I mean, they're attacking Pakistan, a nuclear power. I'm not getting that one, Colonel. I mean, are they just crazy? And all of the attacks that they're doing in the shipping lanes over there, kamikaze drones by the hundreds upon hundreds. I'm not getting it, Colonel. It's almost like they want to start World War III.
From my perspective, the leadership in Iran is manifesting the wild Muslim, the idea of if you don't believe the way we do, you must be killed. Yeah. Indeed, most of the Muslims being killed in the world over the past 200 years were other Muslims killing them, saying, you don't belong to my denomination. There's the Sunni and Shias, and Iran heads one of those, and they are out doing it. They've always said they were going to do it, and China recently has totally backed them up. I do see this as potentially the beginning of World War III. And if our nation will get a bit more assertive, if you slap me, I'll slap you. No, that's not how you stop that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You smack them hard and let them know there's another one coming quick if they do anything again.
I think if the world is a playground, right now we're without a playground monitor. and all of the bullies are free to do whatever they want to because they don't feel accountable to anyone because no one's holding them accountable. And it goes back to, you know, what you allow, you teach. If you allow these rogue nations to do whatever they want to do, they can run roughshod over anyone who's weaker than them. That's what they're going to do because that's what bullies have always done.
Well said. And the fact that Israel is fighting for its existence, it has fought for its existence from the very beginning. And all the international community has done is tell Israel, stop fighting. They've never told the terrorists who have been attacking them to stop attacking. Oh, Israel's killing the civilians. The radicals have been killing Israeli civilians for generations.
Yeah.
And Israel has periodically traded land for a promise of peace, which never happened. So, yes, you know, all the nations around Israel are all Muslim. None of them have taken even one immigrant or whatever you would call them from Gaza or the West Bank who say they were pushed off their land, and perhaps they were. But that happens throughout history all over the world. And those people just migrate to other countries and just settle down. They're not been allowed to migrate. Nobody will take them. And so this is Israel's problem? Well, it is their problem, but it's not their fault.
Well, I guess my opinion is the two-state solution is not a solution as long as one side hates the other and wants them to die.
Yes.
It's just not going to work.
You know, we've been friends a long time, but if one of us wanted to kill the other one, we would not really make a good team.
That's right. That would be problematic, Colonel.
That would be problematic. I wish we'd had a chance to talk about the southern border because I have no idea why anyone in government can name one good thing for America by letting millions of people in that we don't even know who they are. We don't know what they bring in. We could go through that, but we don't have time. Maybe we'll do that another time. Thank you, Skip. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Colonel.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll review the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice, then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Yeah. HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. And now it's time for the Battle of the Month. So, of course, joining us is General Chris Petty. Welcome back, brother.
It's always a pleasure, Danny.
Chris, give our listeners a quick review of your time in Mother Army. You're a West Point grad like me.
Yep. And like we said before you started recording, Army beat Navy this year in football. So, you know, the universe is in alignment and you and I are feeling good.
Amen. That's the important stuff.
That's the important stuff. Anyway, as your listeners have heard by now, I graduated same as you just a few years later, went branched aviation, did a lot of aviation good stuff as a junior officer. Had the honor of taking a battalion over to Iraq during the surge, which really was kind of a catalyst for me on doing some other things. And all of a sudden I got brigade command, and lo and behold, they offered me a star. And I took that, went to Bosnia, commanded NATO over there for a bit, and then served in the Pentagon and then at Northcom. And then after 31 years, it was time to hang it up and be with the wife for a little while. So it was a wonderful experience. And like you, I don't regret any of it.
Amen. It was a great thing. Mother Army is, at least in our time, was a good place to serve.
Yep, she was.
Okay, our Battle of the Month is the Battle of Cowpens. And that's the name that many people may not recognize. It's a great Revolutionary War battle. And it was fought in the southern part of the country, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's the southern theater of the Revolutionary War. And as you mentioned, it's not very well known, which is unfortunate. I mean, it wasn't a gigantic battle, but it was really consequential. And it was fought in January, which I try to align the months as best I can, but January of 1781, between Brigadier General Daniel Morgan, which I think many people have heard of, and of course, the infamous Lieutenant Colonel Bannister Tarleton on the British side. And as I like to start, why is this battle important? Well, number one, it really began a chain of events that led to Yorktown, which of course was the culminating battle of the war and American victory. And in an odd way, this is kind of the beginning of that chain of events that forced Cornwallis to do certain things that led to Yorktown 9 months later. So that's important. Secondly, this is one of those great battles where, you know, I spent some time in the Guard, as you know, and so the history of the militia really matters to me. This is one of those battles where a commander really effectively used his militia in combat as opposed to some others. So it's a good one from that perspective. And then lastly, it's really a tactical masterpiece that more people should understand. Morgan deserves real credit for designing this incredible defense, almost like, you know, people have made parallels between, you know, Hannibal destroying the Romans at the Battle of Cannae. Yeah. I mean, it was that good, a smaller scale, but it was really amazing. So those are the three things that I think are really important about this battle.
Well, it's certainly, as you mentioned, it's significant in what it led to.
Yeah.
And if you're going to study history or if you're going to study life, those are the things you need to pay attention to.
That's right.
It's how you get there that makes a difference and why you get there.
Yeah. All these battles matter. They all matter in the overall scheme of the wars that they find themselves in. So let me give you the quick overview. So it's 1780 first, before we get to the next January. So it's 1780. It's a tough year for the revolution, especially in the South. So back in August of this year, 1780, General Gates, the hero of Saratoga, gets crushed at the Battle of Camden in August. It essentially destroys the entire Continental Southern Army. So the British Southern strategy seems to be working. The Americans are kind of reeling. Congress is in a panic. Washington is not happy. So he appoints a new commander, Nathaniel Greene. But the problem is, there's no traction yet. So Cornwallis is still increasing territory, building supply outposts, ready to start moving north and all that good stuff to link up in Virginia and kind of put an end to this thing. So Nathaniel Greene, though, is a lot smarter than Gates. He does the indirect approach. He says, I'm not going to fight the British head on like Gates did. That was a disaster. So he sends one of his commanders, Morgan, off in front of the British army to, Cornwallis is essentially his left flank, and starts threatening supply depots on his left flank. When Cornwallis gets word of it, he's in that horns of a dilemma classic. He can either separate his army to match Greene and chase, this brash commander, Morgan, out west, or he can keep his army together. Well, he decides to separate his army. He sends Lieutenant Colonel Bannister Tarleton to deal with Morgan. And Tarleton starts racing towards Morgan. Morgan starts moving to prepare. Now, here's the battle. Morgan is situated at this place called Cowpens. It's really a cow pen, really, is how it's got its name. So it's kind of open terrain, but there's a couple little hills, and he uses them to his advantage. So he creates three lines. In his first line, he puts sharpshooters. In his second line, he puts militia. And his third line, he puts regulars. So he really plays to the strengths of his unit. So the sharpshooters are told to target the officers, fire two volleys, and fall back. The militia behind him is instructed to fire three volleys and fall back. He knows the militia is not going to stand in the face of bayonet assaults from the Brits, like they failed miserably at Camden with that. And then his regulars are on the reverse slope of the little hill, and they're told to hold the line. So it's a brilliant defense, uses his terrain, and he also understands Tarleton is a really aggressive commander. So he plays to that as well. Now, Tarleton attacks. His first line gets hit by the sharpshooters, takes out like 40% of his officers. So it's really taking an effect right away. Then the first line falls back. The militia fires their three volleys. They take out more. And as they fall back, Tarleton thinks that Morgan's retreating. So he commits his reserve. He rushes in like Morgan knew he would. And all of a sudden, the militia comes around on his left. Colonel Washington, his cavalry, comes around on Tarleton's right. And all of a sudden, he's in a double envelopment, getting his butt kicked. And it's a great story. And it all comes together with a good victory for the Americans. And because Cornwallis is so livid at the defeat, he vows to hunt down Morgan. And that really is what starts this series of events that leads to Yorktown. So great battle. It was only 1,065 Continentals against 1,150 British regulars. But the effects are, really reverberate through the rest of the Revolution. So it's an amazingly well done battle. Morgan deserves a lot of credit for what he did. Just a great piece of American history.
It really is. And to me, the concept of having some people shoot and fall back and shoot and fall, several commanders during our Revolutionary War used that technique to encourage the British to attack them.
That's right.
And it worked every time, I think.
That's right. We call this a defense in depth, and you know the term well, and it's really effective against an aggressive commander who you know is going to start attacking and keep attacking. As long as you can plan it like he did, using the different strengths of his different components in his army. I mean, it was brilliant.
Yes, indeed. So another great deal. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Chris Petty. And Chris, before I let you go, I want you to talk about the Battle Digest. Knowing about these battles and getting some insight, and particularly your get-to-the-point type explanations in Battle Digest, are really good. So it's a great option for folks who want to learn more about our nation's battles. So talk about Battle Digest for a minute.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Danny. I devote my time now to really crystallizing these historicals, these vignettes, these great battle stories, mostly American battles, but really just the history of warfare through these battle summaries. And they're only 30-minute reads. You can really understand the full context and key actions of a battle and what it meant to history by reading each of these Battle Digest summaries. So if your listeners just go to battledigest.com on the web, just battledigest.com, they will check it out and see there's a book that has a bunch of them in it, same format, or they can order the individual copies or they can subscribe and I mail it out to you once a quarter. And it's like Christmas morning when you get it. So hope they go to battledigest.com.
Indeed. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for your great review of this cool history. Thanks for being a member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. Thank you for being a good friend. God bless you, bro.
You too, Danny. Always a pleasure.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. About 64 this time. I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease. Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. I do a bit of coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. I do. Go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, Peter, a Navy vet and Army dad, wondered how the Secretary of Defense can disappear for a week and have no one notice.
Peter, it's very, very clear that our Department of Defense is very dysfunctional. There's no valid reason why this happened.
And Sarah, the mom of a son who wants to go to one of the service academies, was beyond shocked by the presentation by STARS. She's not sure what to do now.
Sarah, do make sure your son fully accepts your family's values and warn him what he'll be facing, or suggest another place. But most colleges do the same thing. Now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 24 January 1865, the Confederate Congress agreed to continue prisoner exchanges, opening a process that had operated only sporadically for 3 years. In the first year of the war, prisoner exchanges were conducted primarily between field generals on an ad hoc basis. The Union was reluctant to enter any formal agreements, fearing that it would legitimize the Confederate government, but it became more important as the campaigns escalated in 1862. On 2 January 1862, Union General John Dix and Confederate General Daniel Hill reached an agreement. Under the Dix-Hill cartel, each soldier was assigned a value according to rank. For example, privates were worth another private, corporals and sergeants were worth two privates, lieutenants were worth three privates, etc. A commanding general was worth 60 privates. Under the system, thousands of soldiers were exchanged rather than languishing in prisons like those in Andersonville, Georgia, or Elmira, New York. The system was really a gentleman's agreement, relying on the trust of each side. The system broke down in 1862 when Confederates refused to exchange black Union soldiers. From 1862 to 1865, prisoner exchanges were rare. When it did happen, it was usually because two local commanders came to a workable agreement. The result was a swelling of prisoner of war camps in both North and South. The most notorious of all camps was Andersonville, where one-third of the 46,000 Union troops incarcerated died of disease, exposure, or starvation. Though the prisoner exchanges resumed, the end of the war was so close that it did not make much difference.
That was back in the days when the generals on both sides knew each other. They most of them had gone to West Point together, and they could talk and negotiate. Okay, on the 26th of January, 1945, Soviet troops entered Auschwitz, Poland, freeing the survivors of the network of concentration camps and finally revealing to the world the depth and horrors perpetrated there. Auschwitz was really a group of camps designated 1, 2, and 3. There were also 40 smaller satellite camps. It was at Auschwitz II at Birkenau, established in October 1941, that the SS created a complex, monstrously orchestrated killing ground, 300 prison barracks, 4 bathhouses in which prisoners were gassed, corpse cellars, and cremating ovens. Thousands of prisoners were also used for medical experiments performed by the camp doctor, Joseph Mengele, the Angel of Death. The Red Army was advancing deeper into Poland. Having liberated Warsaw and Krakow, Soviet troops headed for Auschwitz. In anticipation of the Soviets, the German Gestapo began a murder spree in the camps, shooting sick prisoners and blowing up crematoria in a desperate attempt to destroy the evidence of their crimes. When the Red Army finally broke through, Soviet soldiers encountered 648 corpses, over 7,000 starving camp survivors. There were also 6 storehouses filled with literally hundreds of thousands of women's dresses, men's suits and clothes and shoes that the Germans didn't have time to burn.
Wow.
And on 23 January 1968, our intelligence gathering ship Pueblo was seized by North Korean naval vessels and charged with spying and violating North Korean territorial waters. Negotiations to free the 83-man crew dragged on for nearly a year. Our government vehemently denied that North Korea's territorial waters had been violated and argued the ship was merely performing routine intelligence gathering duties in the Sea of Japan. Some officials were convinced that the seizure was part of a larger communist bloc offensive, since exactly 1 week later, communist forces in South Vietnam launched a Tet Offensive, the largest attack of the war. Fully occupied with the Tet Offensive, Johnson resorted to quieter diplomatic efforts to resolve the crisis in North Korea. In December 1968, the commander of the Pueblo, Captain Lloyd Butcher, grudgingly signed a confession indicating that his ship was spying on North Korea prior to its capture. With this propaganda victory in hand, the North Koreans turned the crew and captain over to us. The Pueblo incident was a blow to the Johnson administration's credibility, as the president seemed powerless to free the captured crew and ship. The crewmen's reports about their horrific treatment at the hands of the North Koreans during their 11 months in captivity further incensed American citizens.
And should have. And on the 24th of January, 1972, after 28 years of hiding in the jungles of Guam, local farmers discovered Shoki Yokel, a Japanese sergeant who was unaware that World War II had ended. Guam, a 200-square-mile island in the Western Pacific, became a U.S. possession in 1898. In 1941, the Japanese attacked and captured it. And in 1944, after 3 years of Japanese occupation, our forces retook Guam. It was at this time that Yokel, being left behind by the retreating Japanese forces, went into hiding rather than surrender. In the jungles of Guam, he carved survival tools and for the next 3 decades waited for the return of the Japanese and his next orders. After he was discovered in 1972, he was finally discharged, sent home to Japan, where he was hailed as a national hero. He subsequently married and returned to Guam on his honeymoon. His handcrafted survival tools and threadbare uniform were on display at the Guam Museum in Agana. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, Adam and his girlfriend were visiting the Talladega National Forest, and while driving along a national service road, they noticed a woman in distress whose car wouldn't start on the side of the road. They decided to pull over to help. For an hour or more, they tried to get the vehicle working. When their attempts failed, the woman pulled out a gun, marched them into the woods, ordering them to drop their wallets and car keys. At that point, Adam drew his own gun and ordered the woman to the ground. But she didn't comply. Instead, she shot Adam in the stomach. Adam returned fire and shot the robber 4 times. The robber survived, but Adam did not.
Thanks, Colonel. This is a very sad story, but I'm presenting it because there are so many lessons to learn from it. I remember when I was a kid, my father never drove past a car that was broken down. He always stopped to help. There was never a question about it. He stopped simply because he believed it was the right thing to do. But now, after a half century has gone by, our culture has changed. Now, before you stop to help, you have to consider the possible cost. Are they broken down, or is this a trap? My protector-defender instinct is deeply ingrained inside me, so when I see someone in need, it's difficult for me not to help. Despite that, many times I don't stop. Here are a few of those times. First, if my gut instincts tell me something is wrong, then I drive on. Your gut instincts are nothing more than the sum total of all your life's experiences and lessons learned. I've learned that when I ignore my gut, I get myself into trouble. Folks, never ignore your instincts. They are almost always spot on. And second, if my wife and kids are with me, then I don't stop to help. That's a hard and fast rule for me. My primary job is to protect and defend my family, and I'll never put them in harm's way by trusting a stranger. I'll help if I can, but never at risk of my family. I understand this is difficult for some people. However, there are some other ways to help. Simply pull out your cell phone and call 911. The police will send a unit to help them out and even call them a wrecker if necessary. Don't get me wrong, folks. I yearn for the days of my youth when it was safe to pull over and help a damsel in distress. But those days are gone, at least for now. Frontlines of Freedom admires Adam's Good Samaritan values and his willingness to help others in need. And we grieve along with his family at the loss of a wonderful and loving soul. It's good to help when you can, but please be careful.
Skip, if I were in a situation where somebody was holding a gun on me and I could pull my firearm out, I would not order them to put the gun down. I'd shoot them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you can see in this case what happens when you give the bad guy the first shot.
Yes, indeed. Okay, the movie of the month is Cape May County. It's really cool. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Alan Dershowitz will join us to discuss Israel. Then Ambassador John Bolton will discuss the Middle East, and Diane Raver will present the movie of the month. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you will not get anywhere else on the Frontlines of Freedom. Dismissed.